Is it okay if I record you?
Yeah, that'd be the easiest way, really.
Yeah, okay, so I got the...
I'll try to refrain of... I'm not going to try to use any nasty words, okay?
Okay, yeah, because I got the recorder on now, and we'll have you on tape.
All right.
So what was it about Hunt Hall that made it a special place for you?
Well, number one, I got a scholarship for football. I was raised in Baker City all my life, and I got a scholarship to go there to play football. And that's how I got in. And so I was there for 3 years. And then I moved on to a different college and got a police science degree, and then wound up being the police work for a while, and then ended up in the plumbing and piping trades the rest of my life. But anyway, through the process while I was there, of course, that was the first time away from home, of course, you know. Even though I lived in Baker and went to LeGrand, but I didn't go home that much. I lived in the center part of Hunt Hall, the north, south, and the centerpiece, and I lived on the top floor. And had several, you know, roommates for the 3 years I was there, different people. And it was quite the time there. They had a lot of things going on. I mean, you know, they had a dance night there, you know, where you had to take a lady from the girls' dorm and you know, they dress up and you dress up, and you know, you had to go through the whole regiment of learning how to do those kinds of things, the etiquette and everything, and so forth and so on. I did get to help the cooks quite a little bit, learned how to cook on a grill and stuff. They had a lot of nonsense things going there, you know, things that the guys would do. Don't know about the girls because I didn't go over there very much, other than the dinner and that type of thing that we, you know, they exchanged back and forth. And so, well, what else would you like to know about?
Paul, tell me, you know, you referenced the girls' dorm versus where you were staying. So, was the A wing? Was that? Does that strike a bell with you? The very first wing that was built was A wing. You said you lived in the center.
The very first wing was the one on the north side, facing down towards town on the hill.
Right.
Then they had the center one, which would be facing east, and that's where I was at on the top floor.
Right.
Then they had the one on the south side. It was also built.
Okay.
We used to be able to drive up there in the horseshoe, and we used to be able to park in that little space around there. Okay.
And when you referenced the girls' dorm, where was that at?
That was over in the southeast part of the campus. It was called Dorian Hall, I believe it was, or something like that.
Yes.
Okay. And it was just one big, long, big building, and that's where the girls were housed, which was quite a little ways away, by the way, which was good as far as things going. And in between, you had the campus buildings and the small cafe, restaurant, kind of a food service type thing that you had there, you know, if you had to buy things, your bookstore, you know, the library was in between, and so forth and so on. But it was quite the times back then. Things, you know, I was on the track team, I was on the football team, that's all I did, and had all the classes like, you know, normal, and so forth and so on.
What was your fondest memory of Hunt Hall? What's your fondest memory?
Well, I think the camaraderie with all of the guys that were there, the foolishness that they did, the pranks that they would pull on each other. I can tell you quite a few of that kind of things. It was a little dangerous, but it was kind of interesting. You know, just being around guys of your own age that you've never seen before or been around in your whole life until you got there. And then, you know, you just basically made friends and so forth. I think that was the highlight of everything, because you got to meet so many people from everywhere. They had some people from China and Japan and Korea and so forth and so on, you know, over that part of the world, Canada and all over the United States, you know, that people would come there for whatever reason, for education and so forth and so on. So, you know, and I did have one dinner one time, and I was the only fellow from Oregon that was there. Everybody else come from a foreign country, and I was the only one invited. And so I got to see and deal with all of their foods, their cultures, the way they did things, you know, the way they talked, the way they looked, the way they dressed, the way they did things. But they got a lot of stuff from home as far as the food stuff goes, you know.
Yeah.
And so I got to eat a lot of foreign foods that I've never eaten before and still probably haven't until now, really.
Why were you the only one invited?
Well, I don't know. Well, that was kind of strange to me. I got along with most of them. And I had a close friend called Setwam Thin from India. He was a Sikh. He wore a turban, had whiskers, you know, the whole shebang. He was a United States citizen because of... He was born in the States, but he still followed the Sikh religion. I still keep in contact with him. He's down in California somewhere. And talk to him every so often. But he invited me. And of course, I had to stand up and tell everybody who I was and where I was from and this and that, you know. And they all accepted me okay. I mean, you know, I got along with all of them. That part was just remarkable to me. And then from that point on, you know, I was always there, all was their friend all the time, and you know, got to see a lot of the way other people live, because, you know, being in Eastern Oregon, you didn't get to see that many cultures, really, you know. So this is kind of a awakening in life, as I might say. I just thoroughly enjoyed it. It was just really remarkable.
Was there something about the layout of Hunt Hall and that building that improved the socializing aspect of things?
Well, the cafeteria, of course, was in the, you know, down on that one floor right there towards the back. That part was sort of not as easy, but it worked. As far as the layout goes, I did not like the north part. It was the older part. That was the first part that was built. I didn't really care for that too much, mainly because the house mothers lived over there, too, on the first floor. And that made it a little bit difficult over there for those guys because, I don't know, just the way it worked back then. But as far as me on the top floor in the middle part there, you could see all the way over to the admin building and down that direction. You can see all the trees, the colors, all that kind of thing. But it was just enjoyable living there, even though you had to walk up and down the stairs all the time. So forth and so on. You did have the fire escape, and then you could go out the back way there and kind of look over the football field down below and the track and all of that way back then. And then you could see all the trees and the mountains, you know, and the sunrises and, you know, all of those kind of things. It was really remarkable from up there. The views were just great. And then there was one thing that would really, I remember quite thoroughly. Unfortunately, I didn't get to you folks before you started tearing the building down, but one day I was in the room, and my friend and I was there, and we got fooling around, and I can't remember why, but I was up on a chair, and I seen something up on the wall there, and I was going to pound this nail back in. So I grabbed my hammer, and I was up there tapping on it. Well, the molding fell off the corner of the above the closet. And I said, geez, that's kind of strange. I wonder why it did that. And I noticed the board was loose. I said, well, let's see something here. So I finally got that board to move and slid it backwards. Guess what was behind there? A mini still.
Oh, was there?
literally a mini still, the copper tubing, the whole shebang, that they must have used back in the 30s and the 40s. Okay? I didn't even know it existed until I opened it up that day.
Oh, darn.
And we both looked at it and says, oh, okay. And so we decided, well, let's just leave it there because we don't want to get in trouble. So we just closed it back up, and I nailed that board on, and that's where it stood. I didn't know they were going to tear down Hunt Hall, or I'd have been there a lot earlier to try to get somebody to go in and get that piece just for, well, that's what they used to do way back when, you know?
Yeah.
And it's kind of part of history. I thought that was a pretty cool deal. But, you know, you weren't allowed any really girls in your dorm except for maybe once a month or so. And same way with the girls' dorm. Because you had to go to their rooms and stuff and pick them up or whatever and then take them down to dinner and that type of thing, you know. I mean, it's trying to get the social part of life started in your whole conquest of living. There were all kinds of various sundry things that the guys would do. The best I can tell you, they had panty raids. The guys would go over and get panty raids from the girls and vice versa. That was always done when I was gone, though, on football games and things out of town and track teams out of town, so I missed all of that. I don't know how it all come about or what actually happened or how it did it or what happened. The guys got in trouble, the girls got in trouble, but they all seemed to have fun doing it. Once in a while, somebody would get mad at somebody, and so they would argue back and forth, and instead of fighting and everything, they'd wait till the guy left. Then they would sneak up there, and they'd figure out how to get the door open and go in, and they would take all of that other fellow's, they would take his bed, his clothes, his books, everything, and set it up down in the field down below, down there where the track was, the football field. They'd set it right up out in the middle of everything up there, his whole bed, everything. They'd set his whole room up down there. They'd carry everything down there, seriously, they really would. And then when they get back from their little break, they'd come back, nothing's there, and they said, oh yeah, you're living out there now, that's your room down there. So then he'd have to figure out a way to get all that stuff back in his room. So we used to, that got pulled quite a bit while I was there. They had some folks that got mad at somebody on the different floors, and so they actually grabbed a rope. This was really dangerous, but they did it, and how we got out of the mess, luckily we had a custodian to come up and clean the floors every other day, thank God. But they tied doorknob to doorknob to doorknob, back and forth, back and forth, and back and forth, so there's no way you could get out of the building. If that thing caught fire, we'd been all burnt up.
Oh, boy.
That was some of the bad pranks that they pulled. Other pranks people would pull is they'd get a little shingle, something like that, and they'd stick it up in the door above by the door jamb up there, and especially the older building, because you had a little more room, you know, to manipulate, and then they'd take a big soda cup and fill it full of water and set it up there, and then when you open the door, guess what? Hello, you get a shower.
Yeah.
And they did that a lot. You know, I don't know if they still do that or not. I have no clue, but that's what we did. Down in the basement of the brand new building, the last one that they built there on the south side, where the two buildings met, there's those rooms in there. They could have three people in those rooms, and there was a set of triplets in one of them. I don't remember their names. But anyway, one of them was really a prankster, and he was always causing grief, doing some foolish thing, and the other two were great, but the one was just a prankster, and he'd do all kinds of dumb things. So somebody got mad at him, so they went down there, and they got a hold of some gymnasium towels, and they soaked them a little bit so they would stay on the floor, and they made a little path or a little semicircle in front of the door, and then just across the way there and up about, maybe 10 or 12 feet, there was a mop room there. And they would go in there and pour water in there, and then, of course, it would flow under the door. Well, when they got all through, they had probably about 6 or 8 inches of water inside that damn room. And all of their stuff was floating around the next day. And, of course, nobody caught that up. I didn't know if this even happened until the day after everything got all finished. But it kind of ruined the floor and kind of ruined a lot of stuff, and books and papers and clothes, and everything got wet. And, oh, geez, it was a hell of a mess. But anyway, that was another one of those pranks. And so that guy quit pranking people after that. I don't know why he would do that, but he did. And so that was the end of that problem. And, you know, it was just realistically, the people and the drinking and things of that nature, they really didn't get drunk too much. They didn't crowd around. I mean, sure, they went to the bars where they could and drank beer and smoked cigarettes and cigars. But they never really smoked in the building. They never really drank in the building that I ever saw. They were pretty polite for the most part. They kind of respected the building as a college. They did all this stuff on the exterior of the building or in their cars. They never had a woman overnight or anything like that I know of in either dorm that I know of, boy, girl, whichever. I never knew anything about any of that kind of stuff that happened. There was no real physical abuse, really. Nobody beating up on anybody, particularly. They had Walter Brennan's grandson there once in a brand new Pontiac two-door hardtop.
Oh, yeah?
And he come there, but he fixed the engine up so that it had two headers on it, so it had two tailpipes out the back. And he was real nuisance, though, because he loved to hear it run, and so he would go around that horseshoe and get in about the middle, and he'd throw it neutral and rev it up the way past the red line and let up on it, and then the da-da-da-da-da off of the muffler system would rattle and shake all the windows and the doors and wake everybody up. That was an awful thing to do at 2 o'clock in the morning many, many, many times. So finally, one day, one guy got an idea how to take care of it, and I saw the aftermath, you know, a day or so later on all this, about how it all turned out. But somebody around there, a parent, worked in the railroad yards there down in LeGrand, because that was a turnaround space for, you know, to turn the trains around and then hook on other engines to get over the hill to go towards Pendleton. And he had access to those great big tire or big tow chains, and so they grabbed one of those and come up there, and they had 5 or 6 guys, I guess, lifted his vehicle and pulled it backwards and tied it around the telephone pole out there and tied it off to his axle, and then somebody grabbed the fire axe, because they had those back then. Of course, that was the last time they had them on the walls. Put a fire axe through the door, and of course, the guy feared for his life, and he bailed out this was the guy, the Walter Brennan's grandson. He bailed out the window, took off on a dead run towards the car. And of course, the guys didn't chase him too far. They kind of held back and was laughing and hollering at him and get him to move on and move on and move on and move on, you know, urging him to go. He crawled in the car and started it up. And of course, you know what happened by the time he got it going and revved it up super tight and low gear and popped the clutch and was burning rubber, and about that time, quink! That was the end of rear end, axle, and a whole bunch of parts and everything come off the car. So he jumped out of the vehicle and headed down the road to, like, when you come in there. And at that time, you could drive up that hill. Well, instead of going down the sidewalk, he made a right on the roadway and slipped and fell, and he rolled all the way down to the end of the hill. And then the next day they come and got his vehicle with the wrecker, and that's the last time we've seen him. And so that was that story. And then I found out a couple days after that, because I went home over the weekend, and so I missed all the excitement, but that's kind of what sort of took place, I guess. And then, of course, the ever famous, and I don't know whether they got a picture of this or not, I don't know, but somebody had a Volkswagen Bug, and they somehow or another got in, and they rolled it forward, and they had that double, they had that little hooch thing to go into the administration building. Somehow or another, they got that thing through the first set of doors, and then they turned it sideways, so the nose was on the left, and the tail was on the right, and nobody could get through there or anything, and then the workers of on campus had to tear the whole building apart to get the Volkswagen back out of there. These guys, there was five or six or seven of them, I don't know, they actually got that Volkswagen in there and turned it sideways in there.
Oh, boy.
That was another prank that they did, which was kind of interesting. And then they had a professor by the name of Johnson, I don't know his first name. He was in the administration building on the south side there facing towards the sun. And it would get a little warm in the building, so he would open the windows up and you get that breeze, you know, out of the south there, and holy gee whiz, you know, in the wintertime you just freeze yourself to death in there because of the cold, you know, coming off the hill there, you know, to the south, and the guys didn't like it. So somebody got the bright idea that the next time we went to class, he tried opening the windows, and somebody had glued his windows shut. They literally glued his windows shut.
Is that right?
I don't know how they got that repaired. That was, I imagine they'd have to take everything apart. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then he had something else going on, so they glued his drawers in his off of his desk that was in the room there. They glued those shut also. So he had quite a time. And then the real exciting thing that happened in that building also, they had a lady, her name was Dr. Addy. She was a very short, thin, older lady, a psychologist. The football players and everybody, really, I thought she was really a character myself. And she was sort of an earth muffin, I guess, because she wore a lot of hippie clothes, you know, had great big huge earrings and all that kind of thing. She was kind of a strange duck for being up in the 70s or 80s or however old she was. And we were in her class one day, and I was doing what I was supposed to be doing, as well as three or four of the other guys. We were all working on our stuff like we're supposed to do, but there were some guys who were causing grief towards the front. She got mad at them, and she tried to get their attention, and they wouldn't do it. And they would not pay attention to what she wanted to lecture. So she got over there behind the desk, and everybody looked at her like, okay, what is this crazy woman going to do? And she pulled the chair out, and it sounded like chalk being scratched across the chalkboard. That got everybody's attention. About that time, she grabbed the desk with one hand and the back of the chair and the other one, and stepped up on top of the chair and stepped on top of the desk. And she started giving her lecture from the top of the desk and kicking stuff off her desk as she walked back and forth. So the whole lecture, that's what she did, was up there. Man, did that get your attention. That was interesting.
Yeah.
Yes, and she had a doctor's degree in psychology, and that's how she got your attention. So that was another one of those exciting little quirky things that happened. I don't know. They had just a lot of little goofinesses, you know, that went through, you know, all kinds of things that people would prank on, you know, and different things. But as an overall, the 3 years that I was there, it was very educational for me. Especially, you know, never been away from home before until then. Reasonably sheltered to a certain degree. And it was very, very, very enlightening to me by knowing all of the people from all the foreign countries, all the cultures, all of the different ways of teaching, and all the different people that were there, just camaraderie between the ladies and the men. I got to understand how the world sort of operates and how it works and everything, you know, and that kind of set my whole life into play, because when I wound up in the service as an MP, I wound up in Belgium. So I was at CHAPE headquarters, which was south of Brussels, about 30 miles, and it was NATO nations, Supreme Allied Headquarters of Europe. So I got to meet all of the same kinds of folks. And thank goodness I had the background of EOC, as we used to call it back then. That really helped me out a lot, because of that experience of being with these foreign nationalities, and of course they were all in CHAPE, Supreme Allied Headquarters of Europe, and that's when Eisenhower set that up in NATO. You know what NATO is.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had all the NATO nations were there, and all of their militaries and so forth were there. And so it really made a difference for me, because I had the experience at EOC by having all of these friends from all over the world, talking to them, learning about them, and just being friends with them. It really, really made a big, huge difference for me in life. And it really paid off. And because then I got to meet a lot more friends, of course, when I was overseas. But it set me up for that. But I didn't know that was going to happen. Nobody does.
Right.
It's just one of those situations. But it really made a big, huge difference in my life.
That's neat to hear.
And without that, without going to college, I probably would never have been able to do the different things that I've done, gone or wound up in the places that I were, have been, talked to the people that I've seen and talked to and been around and so forth. But the college was just a real big asset for me. Unbelievable. I just wish we could have had a little bit more on manual things back there, learning carpentry, electrical, plumbing, those kinds of crafts and things. Of course, back then it was all book learning. They didn't have anything like that back then. I wish they had some now, you know, because I think everybody needs a little bit of that in life, just to know how to put a picture on the wall, or how to take care of a leak, or how to turn the gas off, or, you know, different things. They need to have some of that in colleges, and I don't think they teach any of that anymore. But they really should, because I really miss that, because I was pretty adept to do those types of things. But I was just hoping they had classes like that, but unfortunately they didn't. But I learned a lot about different things. I took the dance class there, which was really, really great, because it taught you a lot of things about people. Because dance does relate to all over the world. Their music is the same way. Because everything has to have rhythm, or it doesn't work. And so I just enjoyed all of those things. I enjoyed the arts. I didn't have too much, but I had people that were my friends and things that were in art classes, and I used to go and watch them paint and draw people and so forth and so on, and that was really cool. So I think I got a very, very full 3 years there. It really, really helped me out in many, 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 many facets of my life. Without it, I probably wouldn't be where I am at today. I just, like I said, I just wish I had a little more training in just the trade, so to speak. You know, I wish I could have got some of that in there, but then it wasn't set up that way.
Yeah.
But that's okay. I learned it later anyway. But anything else you would like to ask me?
Well, I certainly appreciate your time and appreciate you sharing your story. Also, want to thank you for serving our country. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
It's very, very honorable and noble of you. Thank you. Yeah, unless you got something else that you're just burning to share, I'll turn you loose. But if you got something...
Well, I did meet my young lady. This is kind of a neat story in her own little way, is that I knew this lady, Georgiana, my future wife. I knew her in high school. I did go out with her a little bit, but then she wouldn't go out with me because she was a couple years younger than I. And I lost track of her for the first 2 years of college. But then the third year, I happened to see her over at the, someplace on campus and yelled at her. And we went and talked and had a cup of coffee together, everything, you know, and so forth. And then one day I went over that direction. I was going, feeling kind of blue, so I thought I'd go get an ice cream cone. And I walked over that way by the girl's dorm, and here she was crying over in the corner. So I said, "George, what's the problem?" And she said, "I just broke up with my boyfriend." I said, "Come on, I'll buy an ice cream." She said, "Fine." So we took off, and of course you had to cross that ditch, you know, that runs through there.
Yeah.
And there was a bridge there, and we started to cross it, and they had a 2x6 type thing across there for a railing to hang on to. And I said, "Whoa, wait a minute." I said, "Why don't you just lean on this thing and just listen to the water run and kind of get over your slobber stuff." I said, "Hey, it's getting dark, and I don't want you to fall down with tears running down your eyes and fall down and hurt yourself." So she did. And we were there, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes, I guess. I don't know. I kind of lost track of time. And I was kind of watching, you know, and about that time the moon come up, harvest moon type thing, and, you know, it was up about halfway. And anyway, she got up and looked at the moon and looked at me and looked at the moon, and I don't know who kissed who, and that's where we got started. And so from that point on, it was 5 years before we got married, and if it wasn't for me going to college, I'd have never met her. And I was with that lady until she died a year and a half ago. So we had a very good life. We got to see everything together. We had two beautiful children. And I was over there this summer and got to meet the Mr. Jeff Davis. I've known him for a while and got to meet him personally. And that was really cool. The campus has changed a lot. I was very sorry that they were taking Hunt Hall down. I didn't really like that much, but, you know, life must go on. A lot of memories for me, but, you know, things have to change. They can't all stay the same. And so, but still, there's still a lot of memories there. And I love it over in that part of the world. I really do. I love the Blue Mountains. I like all the lakes. We used to walk up the lake above La Grande there all the time and study up there, you know, in the sunshine and lay back on a pine tree and just listen to the birds and everything, you know. It was great that way too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's just part of college life, you know. But it was a real nice college to go to. It wasn't so pushy like a lot of your big universities. It was more personable with the professors that you had, man or woman. They seemed to all teach you a little bit more and kind of go overboard just a little, and maybe even if you were inclined, you could always get a little bit more information so that you'd learn things instead of just sort of, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was pretty reasonable because I paid $1,100 for 1 year. The next year was $1,200, and the next year was $1,400. So that's the cost of what I had to pay for the 3 years. Of course, I had I played football too, so I had the scholarship. So that really helped a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
But just even working in the cafeteria or working in the on food line there at the cafeteria to feed the whole dorm. Watching them cook this and cook that and how they did things and, which eventually I did have a bakery here too, so that was sort of a precursor, I guess. But I did learn, you know, and all of that stuff makes a huge, huge difference in life. And so I never had a vehicle, though. I didn't need one. You could get around pretty well back then. Everything was pretty safe going everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd always catch a friend going to Baker City or catch a bus or even catch a train back then as far as that goes. So it was just a very educational thing for me. It was one of the things that I really adored in life. And like I said, if it wasn't for me going there, I wouldn't have met my wife. So, again. But I'm just saying that it was just just an awesome place for a young fellow that was kind of sheltered and really didn't know a lot about nothing. But it did shape me up. It did bring me around. And it educated me enough to get by in this big, huge, humongous world that we're in.
Yeah, that's a great story about you and your wife. I appreciate that. That was very touching.
Well, yeah. It's just things that I remember. And, you know, it's just the way things are. And I still had some friends that went there also that were a year or two behind me or in the same year as I was. And I still keep tabs of a couple, three, four of them. And so forth, you know. I call them every so often, or they call me. So we're still friends, but we don't go to each other's house or anything like that because they live all over the United States, so it's pretty difficult for me.
Well,
but anyway, that's about all I can really tell you, unless there's something you really want to know about. Anything else that you can think of?
Well, if I do, I'll give you a call.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know what else I could really say. I mean...
That's good information.
All of the things that we did there at the college, it was very, you know, it was very cultural and artistic and anything else you want to say, because I think a lot of the guys, anyway, were there just, I don't know, just to go out with the ladies, I swear, and that's all they wanted to do. They didn't really get the, you know, the, all of their current... you know, the studies and things, and I'm not so sure it did very good for them, but it certainly did for me, because without it, I'd have been up a creek without a paddle. It really, 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 really made a big difference in my life. Seriously.
That's great to hear. Okay, my friend, well, thank you for your time.
Yep.
And if I've got more questions, I'll give you a call, James. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you know, like I said, it was cold in the wintertime and fairly warm prior to and, you know, after the winter. Because I walked everywhere. And so, you know, I had my dad's, well, I got a navy pea coat and I wore it with a stocking hat. So, you know, I didn't have too much trouble and the sports were okay. They weren't the best back then, but... that really helped me too, as far as to get, you know, to stay in school, because my reading skills, I really shouldn't say this, but my reading skills were only about 60 words a minute when I got to college, which was absolutely awful. So I had to work a million times harder than anybody else in school just to stay there. My grades were never really, you know, they're just above, right around a C or a B, and that was it. I didn't do real well in the grade factor, but I made enough to stay within the sports programs. But it taught me a lot there also. It taught me a lot of sportsmanship, how to win, how to lose, because that's the way life is.
Yeah.
And it's part of that growing up process. I do believe so. Maybe not in high school or junior high or anything like that one back there, but when it come to being out and about and starting your life and so forth as an adult type situation, it basically prepared you, I think, or at least some of us anyways. It did me.
Right.
And
okay.
It showed you how to take care of things, you know, your own personal stuff and your own clothes and keeping halfway clean and keep things neat and keep your bed made, you know, and I mean, you know, do all the things you're supposed to do and keep your room so it's all swept clean and keep it clean and, you know, and how to live with other people. That was a hard thing for me because I never got to be around people much and it was very difficult, but, you know, you soon learn over time. So... anyway, of course, if you wanted something froze, all you had to do is open the window and stick it out there on the ledge and close the door, and it would freeze up like a popsicle stick.
Right.
So if you wanted your pop cold, you stick it out there for a couple hours, and it'd be almost froze sometimes in the wintertime. other than that, we didn't cook in the rooms. Some guys did, but I didn't like it because I didn't think the electrical circuits back then were all that great for hot plates and things, but some guys did, and we did nothing burn, but I kind of turned in a few of them here and there, but they never figured it out, I don't think. At least they didn't come to me anyway about it, but, you know, it was pretty safe living there, really. So, it was kind of the end of the Wild West and Woolly West, so to speak. That's about it that I know of. So, like I said, if you come up with any other questions about things or anything like that, I don't know of anything else I can really help you with. You know, of course, all of the holidays you went home and left your dorm where it was. And oh, yeah, one other thing, too, that was kind of dangerous, but it was funny, but yet it was dangerous. But then again, it was craziness. But once in a great while, these people that did pranks, if they could get into your room, they would leave everything in your room where it is, but then they would save up newspapers or get newspapers from someplace, and they would take a full page and go crump and throw it in the room, and they would fill the whole room with newspapers clear to the door and close the door. So that when you come back off of a 2-day or overnight or from a holiday, you'd come back and your whole room would be filled completely full of newspaper. What do you do with it? And back then they had boiler things or someplace where they actually had somewhere they had fire burning in one of them or something. I don't know, because I didn't mess around looking for that stuff. I never liked to be around that kind of stinky stuff. But supposedly they had a furnace that had a door that they could open up and feed with coal or something. I don't know, but supposedly somebody grabbed hold of a mattress cover and completely filled it full of paper and stuffed it in there all at one time. Well, gee whiz, that could have burnt the whole place down, but that's all a rumor. I don't know if that was really true or not. But other than that, it was just great times of my life there. It was a beautiful place to live. Good clean air. The seasons were great. You know?
Yeah.
And it was just a wonderful place to be.
Yep, still is.
Yep, well, I was there this summer, and it was, it changed quite a little bit. I'm not real crazy about the way they're redoing the campus, because it's sort of, I wish they could have left it where it was. That's more what I liked, but unfortunately, you can't stop time for a future. Things have to change.
Okay, thanks, James. Appreciate it.
Yep, and thanks for calling me. And like I said, if you have any other questions or anything like that, you have my phone number. You can just give me a jingle anytime if you think of something else. The mail service there, by the way, of getting letters and things, is fair. Wasn't the best, but it was okay. Outgoing or incoming or outgoing was somewhat okay. And back then, a lot of the students would help each other. I don't know about now, but they were more, even though they were pranksters and stuff, everybody still helped everybody else. If their car broke down or they needed help doing something, they were a little bit more apt to do that back then, where today I'm not quite so sure that goes on. But they still had, you know, the groups of guys that would run around together, or the group of ladies that would run around together, and nobody could bust into that group, you know. I think that's probably typical of still today, I would assume. But anyway, other than that, that's about all I really have to say.
Okay, thanks for sharing.
Yep.
Good.
What are you going to do with all this information?
We'll probably post it out there on the website so people can hear your story. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks a bunch. I appreciate it.
You bet. Don't put my phone number, though, okay?
No phone. Yeah, I won't put your phone number.
Yeah, no, please don't do that.
Yeah. Thanks, James.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.